This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. You're listening to the Nerdcast on ProjectNerd.com.
Before we get started, does anyone want to get out?
I knew it. I knew you were bluffing. I knew he was bluffing.
You're listening to the Nerdcast.
I feel like I should say something smart.
With Adam, Bob, Iggy, and Tyler.
You mustn't be afraid to dream a little bigger, darling.
Only on Project Nerd.
That is one big pile of shit.
Because at the same time, like, I was a little bit disappointed, but at the same time, I'm on board. Like, it definitely doesn't end. It basically just says, at the end, they're like, all right, well, here's where we're going to start the next movie out.
which is coming out in 2021.
Is it? Did they already announce it?
Oh, yeah.
After this opening weekend's numbers, it has to.
Yeah, they didn't, because they were talking about it being a wrap to a trilogy, but the way, it definitely doesn't. It's
Don't end that way.
It just, it's open. It's not like he dies or somebody, you know, it's nothing spoiler too bad about it, but that's, we're recording and I should have told you guys before Tyler started drinking and
I didn't realize you'd turn it on. How does this sound right here?
Anyways, we're back. The Nerdcast by Project Nerd. And guess what? For the first time in months. We have Adam, Bob, myself, Iggy, and Tyler alphabetically there.
Woohoo!
All four of us are here and we're ready to shine. It's a glow up. It's a glow up, Adam.
You didn't see pictures of me as a child. I was really very attractive.
I was cuter
it's
as
gone,
a kid
it's gone way
now,
down.
Right. So. Okay. Well, I guess Bob, you're going to have to carry that glow up then. Cause
the only thing glowing about Adam is his head.
Well, I won't. No comments there. No comments from me, at least. All right. So the Nerdcast, we're back and it is done. Game of Thrones, 8 seasons. I can't even remember. I looked up the hours a few weeks ago. I should have looked it up again recently. This episode is going to be filled with spoilers. As Tyler warned last week, he's got something to say. He was like, yo, Dre, I got something to say. And we got a lot to talk about with Game of Thrones because it's done. It's ran its course. So if you have not caught the finale yet, it's already been spoiled. So just go ahead and listen. Because if you haven't watched it yet by time this airs and you're listening to a podcast called The Nerdcast, you already know what happened. There's no way you've avoided the memes. And they've been just as gold as they've been all season. But Game of Thrones, guys, one word. Sum up the whole series. One word.
Epic. Has to be epic.
That's probably the best one, yeah. But if you wanted to do something else, you could always do one word. Can I use a hyphen? Can I go with in-depth?
Yes, that's fine.
Okay, I'm going to go with in-depth.
I'm wondering, Tyler's thinking.
One word is hard. George R. R. Martin doesn't do anything in one word. So,
Hodor. Hodor. That's all he had to say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just try to.
Hodor says it 87 times. So it's
that's
not like...
fair.
Yeah, trying to do the entire series as a whole is rough. I would say, I don't know.
Can I hyphenate game changing? Can I even change my own rule? Like, I don't know. It's epic. I think Bob nailed it on the head with the word epic. It's whether, and we'll probably talk about it in depth a little bit this last season. I know many people had problems with it in terms of the season overall and definitely mixed reviews on the very end, but 8 seasons across 9 years, nothing like this have we seen yet in terms of television. This was definitely a game changer. It was definitely epic. It was definitely in depth. It was definitely, I don't know, I guess that's what Tyler was saying. It was different. It was something that had not been done. And even behind the scenes, when the crew and cast were talking about it, it was like filming a feature, especially this last season, filming a feature movie to air every week. And the quality of it, the acting, the writing, you know, even in the worst episodes and definitely the production value was that of a big budget action flick. That's for sure.
Just because you're in charge doesn't mean you get to cheat and literally have all of the words. Like, I feel cheated personally.
I was rolling on past our one word description there.
Oh, okay. I'll allow it then, I guess.
I was moving us on to the next part. So it's a lot to digest and we're going right in. And I don't know, guys, where should we start? Should we talk characters? Should we talk about favorite seasons? Should we go straight to the ending?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, you got to start, like all good stories, at the beginning. I was born. We were young. We grew up. We encountered this fantastic story. We read it and threw our books across the bedroom at 2:30 in the morning when we got to certain parts. These things happen. And then we watched TV shows and we enjoyed looking at our friends and seeing their reactions to certain parts. Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
All right. Are we biting off too much so we can chew right here?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know if we have enough time to go over all 10 years of what's been going on with the show. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's tough for me because, like, I definitely have gone through different phases with the show. Like, I was really into it for the first few seasons and then kind of fell off and then almost completely stopped watching it somewhere around like season 5 or 6 and then came back, you know, last year knowing that it was getting ready to end and catching back up and watching it. But I definitely haven't been as invested in it as I was in those first couple seasons. I mean, it is, like you said, it's something that's never been done before for a television show, I think, at this scale. The amount of money that was spent, the production values and stuff, the caliber of actors, like the people who they got to come on and play like one or two scenes here and there. Like it was something else. And as a whole, I think it will be remembered for a long time, despite some people's feelings about the end.
See, I'm kind of backwards from Tyler. I didn't get into it at the very beginning, and it took me maybe about 2 or 3 seasons to finally get into it. And then once I did, it became must-see TV every Sunday night, and literally watched it again on Monday night when they did the reruns. As everyone said so far, the caliber of acting, the caliber of the production, you just didn't see that on a regular basis. You didn't see the violence. Nothing came close to what HBO did in bringing this show to life. And I'm still digesting this past season. It moved so quick that I'm, you know, still thinking about stuff.
It was. It felt like at times that it's like we talked about George R. R. Martin had the ending and they had written and they're like, oh shit, we actually only have this many episodes left to get to where he wanted us to be. But it was also the fact that when's the last time you can say that? We had episodes over an hour and a half, you know, in length this season too. Yeah. So it happened quick because these were long episodes as well. So character wise, and I know some of us, it's separating the book from the show here, but in the show, what characters, I don't know, grew on you the most? You grew to hate? Or, I mean, what do you feel about some of those main characters, I guess? Without in a half hour on each character, obviously, because there are so many characters. But I don't know, favorite, least favorite, grew on you the most?
I'll jump in there. I think the best part about the show to me, and to an extent the book, are the characters and how different and disparate they really are and how believable they are. I think the overall idea that we're all good and we're all evil and we all have the capabilities to do all of the good things and all of the bad things really plays out very, very well across a lot of the characters. And I mean, probably most personified in Theon. He weaves a tattered web throughout the stories. I think Alfie Allen does a fantastic job playing him. I really, really enjoyed his portrayal of Theon, and one that you love to hate as much as you love to love. His good moments is good. His bad moments are really bad. And he kind of goes through the whole gamut of everything. Good guy, bad guy, despicable guy, admirable guy. So I enjoyed Theon. He's not my favorite character, but I think he kind of goes through so much throughout the story.
I mean, I think the easiest answer and the most popular answer will always be Tyrion, just because Peter Dinklage might be one of the best actors on the show. And he's one of the few characters who from episode one until the very last episode has, I would say, easily the largest role in the series. Like, I don't think there's probably anyone in the series. I mean, I haven't ever looked at it, but I doubt there's anyone in the series who has as many speaking lines as he does, has as much screen time as he does. And Peter Dinklage is just, you know, delightful. He's fantastic. I think some characters are really great, but only get, like, I love Charles Dance as Tywin Lannister, but he doesn't, you know, once he's gone, you know, he still kind of hangs over all the Lannisters. But over these last few seasons, my favorite has definitely been someone who's not as big in the books as he is in the TV show, but is the Onion Knight. He is,
yeah, Sir Davos.
Sir Davos Seaworth is my guy. And I would watch an entire show of just him.
You know, for me, it, and like I said, I came into it late. but like the character that I connect with probably more than anyone, just because how intense this show got. Sometimes you just had to laugh. And when Tormund was on screen, it made it fun.
Bob, when you were saying the character you connected with the most, I was really hoping that the answer is going to be the Hound. Because just the idea of you connecting with the Hound made me really, really happy.
Nope, I didn't connect with the Hound. I'm sorry.
I think we were talking about it, Adam, when I was visiting you a couple weeks ago. We were discussing it on our wonderful Mother's Day brunch, is that, I mean, this is John's story. Really, it is. When you talk about the Song of Ice and Fire, it's his story. He's great, but he's fairly consistent. Like you said, he's a great character. I feel like you pointed out some great things in that nobody, it's not black and white with everybody. Everybody has their motives, whether to be evil or good. The Stark men tend to be more noble and more closer to that black and white in terms of good. But Jon Snow still has to find his way and all that. I Tormund, yeah, easily my favorite. I think he's great. And you bring up a good point there, is he's the character that brought comic relief to the screen. But at the same time, you knew he had whoever's back there, and he knew he could take on somebody, and you knew he was ready to go. That's the kind of person you want there in your life, in real life, you know? Like, that's who you want by your side if you're a real-life Jon Snow. And I'm blown away. At the beginning of the show, I could not stand Sophie Turner. Her acting was terrible. Sansa, as a character, is just not great. So not only Sansa, but Sophie Turner, I think, comes full circle in those 8 seasons. She really becomes a better actress, and she grows as the character grows. And I think that speaks a lot for that role and what was expected of that character. And especially at the end, I was talking to somebody about it. You have all these incredible women characters and so much you can do with them. And at the beginning or midway through the season, you feel like you're almost shitting a brick with it. It's like you had such an opportunity here. And then at the end, especially with Sansa and Arya, they still stand firm and are those characters that you wanted them to be. I think Sansa, in my opinion, had some of the best growth and development. Tormund easily the favorite.
I gave Bob a hard time about identifying with the Hound, but I think the Hound does a fantastic, fantastic story. I can't remember the actor's name. I enjoy his work. He's very, very good. If you've seen Hot Fuzz, he is the YARP guy, which is absolutely fantastic. Every time I watch that movie, I'm like, this guy goes on to be the Hound, which is perfect. But I loved his story. I loved his growth. I love the seasons you get with, or the part of the season you get with him at the Sept building, and kind of just, nope, I'm not that guy anymore. I am doing something else. And then, of course, the world shows up to tear that down for him and turn him back into the guy who does all of the killing. But even those early seasons, he goes and rescues Sansa when Joffrey doesn't do well and gets attacked in the streets by his own people, and Sansa's just kind of left to her own. He goes and gets her just because that's what you're supposed to do. In the middle of him being the bad guy, he's the bad guy in those seasons, but he still does the right thing when it's needed to be done.
So Rory McCann, and there was a funny story on Michael Rosenbaum's podcast, actually. He had a guy who directs all those DC shows for the CW, but he's also done a number of these episodes for Game of Thrones. And the story is that Rory McCann, Gerard Butler, and one other actor, I can't remember it off the top of my head, went out on like a camping excursion. The car battery dies and it's freezing, it's raining, it's everything. And Gerard Butler, like manly Gerard Butler, and the other guy who's like, I can't remember his name, but it's another like manly type actor, sit in the car freezing and waiting. And Rory McCann just disappears for hours and marches miles each way to go get help and come back to take care of the car. And just like, it was no big deal. Didn't even think twice or say anything else about it. And Gerard Butler tells the story left or right, like it's the biggest thing in his life that has ever happened to him. It's very funny. So he supposedly also lives very much like that. He's the mountain man, the wild, you know, farm out in the woods, that type of person, very much like Jason Momoa, obviously the Khal Drogo in the early season in Aquaman. For those that don't know who that is, he's the same way, to where he has that rugged thing to him, and that's his real life too. Yeah, you bring up a lot of good points, and something I wanted to touch on, which we can start talking about this too, on terms of kind of, I don't want to say arcs because it's, you know, but tones and things that happen, kind of almost messages would be a way to put it. So I feel like throughout most of the show, it makes you feel like you lose hope and that you lose belief and that there's anybody noble left. But when you're at the end of it and you're collecting your thoughts and you're talking to Hound and you're looking at Brienne and Tormund and even the Starks and Jon Snow and Tyrion, you realize there were still all these noble people there, and they made mistakes or they made decisions along the way. Jaime Lannister, a great example where his growth went. And along the way, it was, you know, we had all these noble great lords and ladies of Westeros that were still there. They were just fighting for their screen time, I guess, because there's so many characters fighting for what they believed in was right.
They were human.
That's a great way to put it.
Well, and the funny thing is I think you get a lot of the characters who don't get that, who don't have that idea about them, but are that way. And Lord Varys is quintessential that, if we're talking about it, he is the guy from first time he talks about what his values are to the very end, to the screaming, bloody, bitter end. He has those same values throughout the entire show. Now, his actions, you can debate on whether or not they're moral or just or anything like that, but his moral compass is, I will do whatever is best for the people of Westeros, period. And he is directed by that throughout the entire thing. And I mean, that is, it's noble, I think.
Yeah, it's, I think you, human, defining nobility, defining what we would do in those situations. It, what we're going right back to is what we kind of said at the beginning, is that these characters seemed real because they were real, deep characters. And let's talk about all the things Game of Thrones accomplished that no other, we said no other series has accomplished. And we keep saying production value, and you keep thinking off the top of your head, the record setting money and time and extras put into some of these battle scenes throughout there, all of this stuff going on. How they took that many characters from a book and still kept them that deep in the show and made it all work. Like, there's so many good shows even that have problems even giving that much depth to just a handful of characters. And we can sit here and knock on this last season of Game of Thrones or even some middle seasons or whatever. But when you really look at it, these writers for the television side, even where George R.R. Martin was involved and even where he kind of was less involved, did incredible jobs of saying, we have an army of characters and we're still going to give them all the complex depth that you would have with any real human.
I'm giving people a chance. I feel like I'm talking a lot this episode.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, that is definitely true for the ones that they wanted to do it with. I feel like there's a lot of characters who show up, who had opportunities for that, who got turned into one note characters for one reason or another. And there's characters that are in the books that never even show up. Like, my counterpoint for yours, for every character who's an amazing character who's given all the stuff in the TV show, would be Euron Greyjoy. Euron Greyjoy is an amazing character in the books. His path is a little bit different. His characterization is a little bit different. He 100% is a poor man's Jack Sparrow in the television show. Like, he doesn't get to do much. He literally exists to be, he's like the Chekhov's gun. Like, he's we need this thing to happen, so we're going to mention him and then use him to like move the plot forward. But none of his motives make a whole lot of sense. He's pretty plot stupid. His end is fairly, I feel like for every character who got huge development and huge depth, there's a lot of characters who got short shrift.
Well, I said there's so many of them, and it's so many times when you see an adaptation from a book where you have those pages and those chapters and so much room to write on so many of these characters, you see them shallow on screen. So yeah, not all of them made it that way, and you have a point countered right there. But I don't know, I still feel like there was a lot of depth for a lot of characters, which I think is something really hard to do in a show even of this magnitude.
I guess my point would be that I feel like there are times in the show where they would have been better served by going the normal adaptation route and calling a few more characters to give better development to the characters they did use. I sometimes think that they're like, well, this character's in the book, so we bet half. And like early seasons, they definitely did a better job of that, where there were definitely characters who got pulled or culled or cut for various reasons, and then it helped the story move a little bit long, better. Like, Rob, a lot of characters in Rob's orbit like got cut or cold. They've changed some names. They did some stuff, and it made things work a little bit better. Whereas towards the end, they're like, oh, here's this person, here's this person, here's this person, here's this person. Okay, no, that we're done. We don't actually need that person. We brought them in for this one scene and then moved on.
You know, I think it was the second episode this season, right? It was before the Battle of Winterfell, where they brought everybody in. To me, that seemed like the curtain call for this cast and these characters. This is everybody's last chance to see the characters that people felt were important to them. Everybody was there. You know, that type of moment, talk about the vastness of characters. And I agree, there are, I mean, if I'd hate to be the casting director on this show with how many people they had to bring in. That episode right there to me was the one episode, I think this year, even more than any of the battle scenes, was the one that really hit me the hardest, I guess, during the last battle. I mean, yeah, everybody died, but just those moments where we got to see the characters being themselves with other characters, that was really special.
All right. So you bring up a good point, because that episode probably started the tone of the polarizing views on this season. So I know Tyler checked out a couple seasons earlier. We had, you're always going to have people that fall off or jump in late, but it seemed collectively the internet, I mean, to a level that there are petitions even, had a problem with this season. And I had a problem with the season. I'm not signing a petition or anything, and I was pleased with the way it ended. I feel it was the weakest of the 8 seasons. It's still a greater accomplishment than anything I've done in entertainment. Better than any podcast I've edited, that's for sure. So it felt like it was that. And it was because that argument between, is this fan service or is this not? Are we wasting a whole episode doing exactly what you said? And it was great to hear your view there of saying you appreciated that, you liked it. Because to me, I really didn't like that episode. And that's where I think I finally posted something online and said, I may not be in the majority here, but I really think the season's not good. And that's when, like I said, that same Monday afterwards where you saw everybody kind of put that opinion I put out there and almost started this downfall. I feel like that, as much as you pointed out, added some value to people who wanted that, I think it damaged the season as well as the darkness of The Long Night, the third episode. I don't think I've seen the internet more in rage over anything than I did about how dark that battle was.
The last time I saw something like that was also HBO, and it was the end of The Sopranos. Right. I feel like people lost their goddamn mind about that thing. Yeah, you can't please everybody. I'm 100% on board with that. And I know that there are people who dislike the season, and I've read some of the stuff that's out there, and it's the same kind of stuff that upsets me when people just don't like something to not like it. And that seems to be a lot of what it is. I haven't heard a lot of, I guess, what I think of as legitimate complaints. Sure, the third episode, Long Night, might have been too dark. I didn't have any problems with that. Nothing that, you know, turned me off or pulled me out of the episode or anything like that. So I don't know what was going on there. And I can understand being frustrated with that. But I think part of some of that episode's design is to be hard to watch, hard to keep track of, the fog of war, whatever you want to call it, the realness around there. And then I think some of the other decisions they made that I've seen people complaining about are also well thought out and well designed. I think you talked about hope and the loss of hope and the regaining of hope earlier in the episode, Iggy. I think that's what episode 2 was this year. It was to show, why are we even fighting? Obviously, we don't want everybody to die, but it's because there are people. It's to show that humanity. It's to show that connection. And I think it gets a whole episode because that idea is so important. But also, it draws out that lead up to the fight, that lead up to the battle. We've been dealing with it for seasons now. And I think it designed to increase that tension going into it. And I think you see some of that with the last episode. I saw people giving them hell about, well, they really don't know what to write about anymore. So they just have people walking for a long time. I'm like, no, it's purposeful. They're walking for a long time because the idea is to build tension. We need to show that something is going on and that it's taking a long time and know what these people are thinking about while they're doing it. I think there are purposeful reasons for it. And I think they did a really good job with it.
You know, Adam, you made that comment about The Sopranos. No, the finale that got most of the internet going was the finale for Lost. And that was probably the one comment I kept hearing on the internet was, finally, a show had a worse finale than Lost.
I would say that both of those finales are topped by how bad the Dexter finale was.
So it's funny, before we start recording, Dexter Sopranos finale has been brought up comparison. I'm also glad you brought up Sopranos, because when I was explaining to my son the other yesterday, I let him watch this last episode, explaining to him, Yeah, the last time I feel like there was an accomplishment this level in television was also HBO. It was Sopranos, because he made the joke like so many others did last night. Well, everybody's going to cancel their HBO subscription. Well, no, there's still Westworld. There's still, what is HBO going to do next? Because they're the ones that usually change television. I think a big thing, you brought up pacing for this season. So we're talking season 8, the last season. But I want to touch on that because you bring up pacing. And I felt, I want to rewatch this whole season as much as possible in 1 to 2 sittings, because I felt like the writing, the directing, everything took the approach we're seeing with a lot of the streaming services television, the binge type approach. The first 7 seasons were very much, you're watching this episode, you're going to wait a week. This, it felt like if I would have left 1 week and immediately started the next week, I would have possibly had less negative feelings over certain things that happened this season. And that's because you're left sitting there with this. And I agree, the long walk things, I agree with you on certain things of setting these tones, because we are at the end and we're all getting impatient. And it was just, that just toyed with your emotions more. So I felt that was strong too. But at the same time, a great example was people that were complaining about the very last episode. I felt if we would have seen Danny torching people and then immediately gone to the events that happened afterwards, we would have had a different, it would have had a different impact on us than sitting there for a week and then coming to this episode where we are expecting all kinds of action again, and you're not getting tons of it. So I think, again, revisiting it, maybe others who have problems on that, maybe consider that idea too. I want to give that a shot, see how it plays out. I feel like I'm going to feel very different about the pacing of the last season if I visit it that way.
I agree.
Yeah, and to pick off where Adam was talking about complaint. I mean, there have been, like, the internet obviously has felt strongly about this season, to say the least. And a lot of the complaints were silly and dumb and not, you know, superficial, like the coffee cup or the darkness of a single episode or the lack of ghost here and there. But then some of them, I think, were warranted, but I think some of them were unavoidable. And I think some of them were just differences of opinion. Like we said, coming into this season, and depending on how inside baseball you get with it, of why they only did 6 episodes, why this was this last season, why all that stuff between the producers, is like, there's a lot of stuff out there, and it depends on how far down that rabbit hole. But regardless, this week's season was going to be the last season. There's only going to be 6 episodes, and you have 37 plot points you have to wrap up, and you have to get from A to Z in 6 hours or 10 hours, depending on how long each episode goes. That's a lot of writing to do. And unlike someone who shall remain nameless, who's had the better part of 20 years to meticulously plot these things out and write how we get from point A to point B, this place, they had, you know, a year and a half to plot it all out. That's tricky. Now, are there ways they could have done a lot of it better? Probably. The book ending may be slightly different than this, but I wouldn't be surprised if point for point, like, the big plot resolutions are what they are in the books. I 100% contend they will be gotten to in a significantly better or more natural or more fleshed out way than they were this season. Because there were some that were straight kick in the pan. Most of those, I think, probably revolve around Danny a lot. But I think a lot of characters had their arcs come to an end or had them make decisions so they could get them to their end in ways that were a little bit odd. I think Jamie was one that a lot of people were upset about, like how he got from where he was going to where he finished. Same with Cersei. I mean, Dany especially, like, her turn was not unexpected. Her turn was a long time coming. Her turn was a long time foreshadowed, but it definitely felt like it went from 0 to 60 in a hot second. Like, it wasn't, there wasn't a lot of work put in. Were there some things where I'm like, yeah, there's a cleverer way, or there's a better way of doing that? Or are there moments in the show where it's like, you didn't know how to gracefully end that character's show, so you went for spectacle over just good writing? Like, there's no necessary reason that Lyanna Mormont needed to die being crushed by a giant while stabbing him in the eye. But they're like, well, we're done with her now, and people like her, so we'll give her a sweet big moment that serves no purpose whatsoever, but looks cool on film and is epic.
Looks good on film, I think, has a lot to say for it, because you get characters like Podrick who people just freaking fell in love with, and hey, guess what? Podrick is going to be around all the way till the end now. And spoiler for the books, kids, that is not what happens to Podrick Payne. So,
same with Brienne. Like, Brienne's been gone in the books for quite some time. So
I want to save the end for the end. So let's not go there yet.
But I was going to say, Tyler, you kind of sounded like Deadpool there. You know, that's just lazy writing. Iggy, you know, you made the comment about if they would have gone right to it. So if the last episode would have been a combination of the 5th and 6th episode together, what do you think? how would you have reacted to
that?
Well,
again, I want to give us another 15 or so minutes before we get deep in the ending, but I liked the last episode. I will explain my development of feelings over time, because I definitely had a full spectrum of feelings from, like where you said, where Daenerys got stabbed and shit then happened to the very end. But I wanted to do some quick one-offs, some quick questions and stuff for you guys. Okay, all 8 seasons, best death. Who had the best death?
Like, who went out the best, or whose death was like the
however you want to interpret it. You were the most excited about it, as best that was death. A great way to go, or that person needed to go and the way it happened was fantastic.
Joffrey, right off the bat. That was the best death for me.
100% Ramsay getting fed to his dogs.
Oh, that's
that's the best one. Like, no one will top that one. He went out exactly the way he needed to go out. I wish he had gone out slightly sooner than he did, but he has the best one.
Yeah, I think that one's probably the correct answer. The coolest death is probably Danny burning all of the calls in their cool little hut and just walking out of the flaming building like totally okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's the one that's kind of like, oh shit, okay, yeah, this is what we do now.
Yeah.
Well, that was the direction I was going to go with it, as in terms of a death that changed the tone for it. And I'm going to say something that might sound odd when I first say it. I think Ned Stark is the biggest death. And it was the biggest death for, I thought, was because I know Adam and Tyler, y'all had read the books at that point. Y'all knew what was going on. And as we got closer and closer, and the way y'all had talked about it and alluded to it, I'm like, oh shit. But for people that had no clue, that just happens. And there's no reason for anybody who has ever watched any television series to believe it's going to happen that way, because he's set up to be your main protagonist.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and they make such a big point about how, like, oh, he just says the right things and everything will be okay.
He says the right things. He does everything right. He's doing the right thing for everybody. He's a great guy. He seems to be loved by everybody. And when he dies, especially people who weren't familiar with the books, that just changes it for everybody. Because all bets are off then from there. Because now you're all of a sudden, George R. R. Martin's, he's not playing by any predetermined rules. George R. R. Martin is setting his own rules with this.
I don't know. We get, I feel like he's, George R. R. Martin's, like, most masterful thing is convincing everyone that this is not your typical fantasy fair, and that anyone can die, and that characters don't have plot armor, and that based on literally 2 scenes, and that's Ned, and that's the Red Wedding. Because now name for me another death of the books or the TV show that is as jarring or as unexpected as that. Like, I feel like I can, Ned especially, the Red Wedding, like, plot is affecting in a way that's like, oh my God, I can't believe that just happened. But it doesn't really have a ton of effect on the plot, like where the story was at that point. Like, no one who dies there, I mean, you can say Rob, you can say Caitlin, but like, no one who dies there, like, really changes where things were going or how things were moving. Ned obviously does. But after Ned dies, like, that doesn't happen again. If those were the rules, someone like Tyrion wouldn't still be alive. Tyrion has escaped death with plot armor so many fucking times, it's not even funny. Same with Jaime, same with Cersei, same with every other character. Like, I'm not saying that he doesn't, like, everyone.
Okay, we get what you're saying. So now we're going to answer you. So biggest thing is, you're right. You're exactly right. But we all talked about it and acted like it still was. So we all sat there for 7 seasons after that, or how many books after that for those that were reading, and expected it or waited for it. And you're right. It didn't. He didn't change it. He didn't anything. But we all sat on the edge of our seat.
That's wondering. What I'm saying. That's his most clever thing, is he did it. He pulled off a head fake in book 1. About, like, this isn't your normal...
Head fake there is a good choice of words, by the way.
Yeah. He pulled off this misdirection. Like, I'm going to subvert your expectations. This isn't your typical... And don't get me wrong, it's darker and it has some themes that aren't normal to see in fantasy, but literally after Ned gets his head chopped off, everything follows tropes almost to an embarrassing degree in some cases.
You know, you made a comment about, Ned Stark and the Red Wedding were probably... Red Wedding wasn't a game changer. I think the only other death after that that people, I don't know, people watching weren't expecting was possibly Hodor. The most influential death, I think.
It was one of the more emotional deaths, that's for sure. Unexpectedly, probably one of the most tear-jerking deaths in the entire arc.
Mm-hmm. But as soon as it had happened and you figured out what it was... I mean, it was to a T, like the noble, you know, besides like sacrificial death. Like, it wasn't like Ned, where Ned dies, you just sit there looking like, well, now what the fuck's going to happen? Like, that one happened, you're like, oh my God, that makes so much sense. It's so amazing that this was his character arc.
I was going to say, I want to argue the Red Wedding real quick with you guys. I feel like, so obviously in the books, Robb Stark was not as significant as he was in the shows. I feel in the shows, it changes the tone because Jon Snow is not Jon, the ending Jon Snow at this point, I guess, if that makes sense. We don't have the buy-in that Jon Snow is going to be the Stark that comes and makes the difference. So we're, especially those at the time, not familiar with the books, you're all in on Robb Stark. And then this shit goes down. And now you're like, as much as you, like you said, you're sitting there after Ned Stark and you're like, well, what now? And then you're like, oh, that's okay. Robb Stark's marching down. He's going to avenge his father. The Starks are still going to make this set straight and everything. Sansa's over here crying about everything. Arya's off doing her own thing. Jon's still at the wall or even north of the wall. It's Robb. Robb's going to take care of this. Now, bam. Holy hell. Who's going to fix this? And I think when you guys say that it doesn't have that much influence, I think anybody that was in the Stark band, that's when everybody turned to Daenerys. That's when everybody was like, I'm all in on Daenerys now.
Well, you had an unreasonable crush on Robb Stark, I think.
I do. I'm okay with this.
Yeah, because Robb very clearly in the show, even if I hadn't read the books, Robb very clearly in the show did know what he was doing and was not ever going to win.
Right.
Like, he was not good at being
with faith, Starks were going to, because the Starks from the get-go seemed like the ones that were going to make everything right.
No, they just seem like everyone who was going to do everything right. And then that's why they don't ever live very long and why they hide out in the north. Because if they had to live in the real world, they would all be fucking dead a long time ago.
This is true. And my wife and I had a really good discussion about the Red Wedding and about kind of the differences in the show and in the book. And it's affecting in the book in a way that the show doesn't quite get, but also is telegraphed a little bit more in the book, because they say probably you could probably get the phrase 17 times, you need to eat and drink when we get there. Robb is told for over and over again, you need bread and salt. So as soon as we get to the twins, eat and drink. And it's like a chapter and a half. And then they get there and they eat and drink and you're like, oh, okay, everything's okay. And you're like, nope, nothing good is going to come from this.
Yeah, the book makes it a big deal for a while about like the rules of host and hosted are, the rules of hospitality are steadfast and written into like the very bones of the people of Westeros. And these rules are not to be broken. And when they are, it is very, very shocking. Also, he has like a wife at that point, and it's like a different character that's more, it's a bigger part of the plot that they decided. It was a bigger deal than them just killing Robb in the books. Also, Catelyn's death is very different in the books in that scene and stuff like that. So, and we got Lady Stoneheart, which was real dope.
I guess let's go towards it. Let's talk the end. Let's get to the end. Overall, I finished the episode, and I'll let you guys chime in before I do fully, but I did say I was underwhelmed with season 8. That's how I'll put it. I was underwhelmed. I wasn't completely disappointed. I was underwhelmed, and I just kind of went on a spiel about how if I viewed it differently, maybe I'd feel a little differently. But when we got to the very end, I felt satisfied. I think that's the way to put it for me. And I'll go into detail here in a second, but how were you guys feeling last episode and how it kind of wrapped?
I use the same word, underwhelmed. You know, everybody was expecting the bloodbath at the end and whoever stands on the top of the bodies is going to be the sitting on the Iron Throne. But I do agree with you. I mean, the way it ended, I think there was a peace within me that this ended right.
It seemed logical based on everything we had seen.
The right people got to where they needed to go. John wanted to be up north. And I mean, he got banished, but yeah, he got up. He's up north. Sansa got to be the queen of the north. And Arya got to do what she wanted to do. I think the only one who didn't want to be there was Bran. I think he made the sacrifice. Like I said, it almost was like watching Return of the King go off to the ships and everybody turn. And I expected Frodo to come out saying, I ain't coming back. But no, it was, I felt very satisfied.
Yeah, I think the very first word I messaged to a few of my friends who I knew was watching at the same time was underwhelming. Like, that was surprising. It ended on a significantly more hopeful note than I thought it would. Like, it definitely ended. They definitely tried to give it almost a happy ever after sort of feel to it, which I didn't see coming. I don't know if that stays true to the tone of everything. I think there was one surprise in this episode that I didn't see coming. I mean, I knew it was always a possibility, but I will honestly say that if you had asked me 10 different times who was going to end up king of the Six Kingdoms, Seven Kingdoms, I would not have said Bran. Like, I did not see that one coming. If for no other reason that I didn't think he obviously had no interest in doing it.
I said Cersei over Bran. Like I said, I could see Cersei ending up still on the throne at the end of this before I would have ever thought Bran.
And then there was a few things that were silly and fun. Like she obviously waited to the end, but how angry were all the other rulers when they were like, when Sansa says, "Now we're not joining, we're going to be independent, fuck off." And everyone's else. And everyone's at one. And like,
I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, like, I mean, I feel like Yara was like, what the fuck? That was a choice? Because fish, the Iron Islands are out then. I didn't know we had that as a choice. No one told me that was an option. In the real world, the other six kingdoms would have all stood up and be like, oh yeah, fuck, yeah, no, I'm doing that. I want to do that thing.
Well, she learned to play the game.
She did, and her character arc was really good. I don't know. I feel like they definitely ran out of gas with Arya after she killed the Night King. I don't know. It was a good ending.
I've got a weird feeling in a relationship with the end of the show. I really enjoyed it. I liked it. Really, really liked this last season as well. I think it's complex and it asks a lot of the viewer to keep themselves engaged and to put themselves kind of through the paces with the characters. I also immediately was, I don't want to say underwhelmed, I was disappointed in the ending because it was an ending. And they tie up a bunch of the questions that they ask, but they leave so many more. I want to know what's going on. I want to know how Bran handles being on the throne. I want to know what Jon does north of the wall. I want to know what Arya finds west of Westeros. Those are amazing questions, and I want more. I'd be super happy with two other episodes just delving into that more and, you know, even doing the cheesy fan service 5 years in the future, 10 years in the future, whatever they want to do. I want more of it. So that was my disappointment, was that it is over, that we don't get any more.
I mean, it has to end, I guess, but so obviously we're at the point where I think the climax kind of hits its finale is when Jon stabs Daenerys. And when you see it, and I think that's why they show you Daenerys's army as big as it is at the end, because then you're reminded, we can't have another battle. There's not enough people up north to take this on. So it has to be handled one-on-one here. And Jon has to make that decision. And Tyrion walks him through it. And Jon so emotionally hangs on to Daenerys, like in that conversation. And then he goes and makes the Jon Snow decision, as only Jon Snow would make. Nobody else would have made that decision and then just stood there and let himself been put in prison, basically, for it. Like, nobody else would have done it. Only Jon Snow could have.
Well, he gave her the chance. He gave her the chance to release Tyrion, you know, to show mercy.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Jon would be the only one that would have walked up, rationally said that, and then done it, and then just stood there and taken what was that. He was the only one that was going to make that choice.
All right.
So once that's done, exactly. Tyler, I think you said it. You look at your watch and you're like, we got a lot of time here. What's going to happen? When they're all sitting down there and they bring Tyrion out, I'm like, perfect. They're going to free Jon. At that point, I think all the kingdoms are going to go their different ways. I think that's what's going to happen, because it makes sense right there. When you see all the lords kind of sitting together and working together, I'm like, oh, they're going to each rule their kingdom independently and kind of come together as a group, like, and make things happen. And then as it progresses, and I said it out loud when he says, Bran the Broken should be this, I'm like, what the actual fuck? I was like, I am 0% in right now. Jon is sitting in jail, now has to go to the wall, and Bran's going to run this? I'm like, I am not buying in. Everybody else gets on board, and then Sansa does her part. And that right there where I said, I bought into her character at the end, and I'm like, okay, I like what Sansa said. No, we're staying independent. I'm calling my own shots. I have gone through hell, probably more than anybody else here. I'm taking care of what's mine. And I was like, okay, I can live with Jon being on the wall. I can do all this. Arya then gives her spiel of that. She's going to go be Arya. She's the free spirit. She's not going to do it. Cool. As soon as Jon gets to the wall and you see Tormund and Ghost standing there, and you knew right at that moment, oh, he's not staying at the wall. He's marching north. Adam, you made the gesture earlier, because Adam, you were saying that's where he belongs. That's what should happen. And it was your wife and I who were like, yeah, that makes the most sense. But he doesn't get to make that choice. That's the whole point of what they're forcing upon us, is that Jon doesn't get to make these choices. He does. And he gets to go be it. And when Jon gets that ride off, he gets Ghost back and he rides off with Tormund north of the wall. That's when it just, I think everything settled over me. And I'm like, I am completely happy with where this ends then. Again, because I think so much became invested in Jon and what was going to happen for Jon. And John gets what he truly wants. He didn't want anything to do with this. And as I was talking to people at the end of it, John would have stayed north of the wall if it wasn't for the Night King, if it wasn't for his friends and his sisters that he felt he had to go back and protect. When John died, he said he wanted to go nowhere near that again. When he came back from the death, he's like, I want nothing to do with that again. I'm out of here. And he had to make those choices. And then he falls in love with Daenerys and has to make that choice to stand beside her. But the whole time he's talking about that, even with Daenerys, he's like, no, I'm going to help her and I want out. Like, I don't want to co-rule this. He wants out. I think that's where I got the happiest ending, was seeing John go do what John wanted to do and be a wildling.
It brings it all back into being a character story instead of the spectacle story. Yeah. So yeah, I agree.
I do want to touch on the point where you said that they showed that giant army and how big it was and how we couldn't have another battle. At the same time, obviously there's a pretty big time jump from him killing Daenerys to all the leaders, because they all had to come from wherever they were. And it looked like, obviously, Tyrion had been in jail for a while, had Jon. But like, I need someone to explain to me why the minute they realized that Jon killed Daenerys, that the Unsullied and the Dothraki didn't just go fucking ham on everyone else in Westeros, like, to the last man. Those two armies aren't usually, especially Grey Worm and the Dothraki, aren't really known for being super reasonable when it comes to decisions made
Dothraki,
around
Dothraki, for sure, yeah.
Around Daenerys, and they all just kind of laid down and said, all right, cool, like, here, come, fucking, you guys decide, we're out, we're done, we're out.
Well, at the same time, they'd fought how many wars in the last 6 hours? I think they were like, I need a break. Grey Worm was literally transporting from one location to the next. John walks past him assassinating people and then walks up the stairs and there's Grey Worm standing there too. It's like, this guy's everywhere. He just needs a break. I think Grey Worm was just like, fuck, just give me a couple days while the lords gather, because out.
I feel like that was a little bit odd, where the Unsullied and the Dothraki straight said, oh, fuck it. You guys come down, you figure it out. We're getting on ships and getting out of here. We're done. We're done with this stupid land and this, your stupid right? people.
They just want out.
Stupid rules. We're done.
Well, they're like, we don't got any dragon to back us up anymore. Maybe we just go quietly into the night. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But yeah, there, as like we said, and with any show, there's going to be those things that feel like loose ends, or we're just things to allow us to get to the next point that didn't make a lot of sense. But either way, I think we're all on the same page in saying Bob's word there, epic. This was an epic, epic journey, I think, for so many people. And the amount of people that got on board, the amount of people connected. We sit here and talk time and time again on this podcast and in articles and on other podcasts and websites, what Marvel is doing at the level of theatrical movies and stuff like this. But Game of Thrones was accomplishing something just as epic right here on TV screens. HBO hit the jackpot with it, that's for sure. So I say kudos. It was a phenomenal ride. I am happy with it all the way. I mean, I don't really have much more to say, which is good, because we're running out of time. So I'm happy and felt good about it. And I think as we started the episode, we were all very slow to start talking about it, because there's still so much more to digest. I'm sure over time, there will be plenty, plenty more conversations to have about it. And especially amongst the four of us. And that's why we do this podcast, is because we have always plenty to say to each other regarding all these types of things. Books, obviously, would be highly recommended, especially from Tyler and Adam. I don't know, if somebody that wasn't in this world jumped into Game of Thrones, where would you tell them to go next? Maybe less on the reading, more on the viewing side.
Just wait for Dune to come out.
Wait for Dune. that's all Tyler and Adam are doing anyways for the next,
I have lots of book recommendations.
That's why I said viewing, not books.
I mean, there's some really, really good
into a corner here, buddy, without
if
books,
you so. Like, if you like dark fantasy, I have some. I mean, like you said, HBO is gonna have to do something, because Barry also ended last night, so they don't have really anything huge on the slate right now.
They were ready to drop that Westworld trailer, though. They dropped it as soon as Game of Thrones is done.
So they dropped that Westworld trailer before the episode aired. It showed that was the first thing that showed before the episode aired. And that was the first, I was like, oh, fuck, that was awesome. I'm excited about that. So I'm excited about Westworld. The trailers for their adaptation of Pullman's His Dark Materials looks real good. I have absolutely zero hope that this, whatever this weird ass Watchmen adaptation is going to be.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about it.
It's got some good actors, but like that.
Well, so the intro for my viewing of the series finale was HBO's "We're Just Getting Started" promo.
Yeah.
Literally, like, No, don't cancel your subscription because we've got so much stuff getting ready to hit you guys. And they listed probably 17 different TV shows.
At least.
It was crazy. Yeah. Not including like the documentaries and like their ongoing political series, those kinds of things, but like 18 TV shows that are new and like, hey, this is something going on. You should check it out.
But not one of them is going to be have the magnitude that Game of Thrones had.
Yeah, but we
don't know.
We said the same thing when Sopranos was done.
I was just about to say that too.
Never going to be able to do something like that again. And sure as shit, no problem.
Well, let me just say this. Game of Thrones is not quite over. This Sunday, HBO is showing a documentary of the last season. What are they calling it? The Last Watch. I'm not sure what time it's on, but it's basically a documentary on the filming of the last season. Maybe there'll be some little tidbits that we kind of hinted on that may be explained a little bit.
We'll see. They've done a good job without spoiling too much of the future of explaining some of the things that have happened in each episode with those wraps. So this documentary might be a good setup to, like you said, clear some things, at least from the TV writer perspective. As you mentioned, indefinitely, you don't know how long you're going to be waiting for the next book to, let alone the last book. So, but HBO does have obviously the prequel and plans, but mentioned tons of different shows. And I said it last night, we've said it multiple times here. Sopranos was a game changer. Game of Thrones is a game changer. Westworld still has that capability to be the game changer. Yeah. HBO's the one, if anybody's going to do it on television, it's going to be HBO. So yeah, hold on to those subscriptions. Other than that, I'd say we're all on the same board. Game of Thrones, big thumbs up. Definitely gives the recommendation from the entire Nerdcast team. Go check it out. As always, in the comments, let us know what you thought about the entire series. Any of the questions we asked, give us those answers. We want to know your favorite deaths or your, biggest deaths, I guess would be a way to put it. Your favorite characters, best development, least favorite characters. What you thought about the final season or all the seasons. And of course, your thoughts on the finale. Additionally, any feedback with that, let us know. Something maybe we didn't cover. Something maybe we missed. Starbucks cup, water bottle, whatever it is. Let us know. Obviously your thoughts, and of course keep on this channel, the Project Nerd Podcast channels, as we've been rolling out new episodes of Diving Deep, I'm Not Famous, Meeple Skills, and of course some of our great audio interviews. I think that's it. That's all the podcasts we have on our channel. Oh, now streaming, but I haven't done it in a while. I'll try to get it out this month. Now streaming as well. So we have a lot of podcasts, but you can also catch on its own channels, Modern Sex, Radults, and Sexy Nerd Science. For our last update, of course, is where we will be event-wise. You can come check out some of us at Mile High Comics, the week of Denver Pop Culture Con. That is May 31st through June 2nd. Mile High Comics is the country's largest comic book store, or the world's largest comic book store. We'll be out there hanging out with some of the creators and stuff there that aren't as crazy about Denver Pop Culture Con. We won't go into that. But then, of course, in June, Omaha, OCON Expo, Omaha Council Bluffs, June 28th, 29th, 30th. Come check us out at the Project Nerd Pavilion. We have a huge setup with a lot of exciting things going down. We'll be giving you some more information over the next few weeks with that. And before we close, I do want to say, Adam is getting ready to move. So we're not going to have a lot of Adam over the next month. It's going to be quiet. Adam, you will be missed. We will do our best to make fun of you or make callbacks to you and stuff like that while you're not here. We'll be filling your shoes with some other co-hosts that will at least not have the beard you have. They will never be able to have that, that's for sure. But he's not gone for forever. He'll be back as we have this new schedule. We're airing, obviously, on Wednesdays going forward. But with that, let's wrap it up. We are out next week for Memorial Day. You guys have a great holiday weekend. So until June, that's it for the Nerdcast. Same nerd time, same nerd channel.
Bye now.
Hey, Pro Nerds, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like the Nerdcast and other amazing Project Nerd podcasts, please go give us a subscription, a like, a review, wherever you find us, as we need your love and support to continue making awesome content. Next week, we'll be back with another great episode of Nerdcast, as well as other original Project Nerd podcasts.